So what actually happens when you just hand over the master keys of a completely blank internet server to an AI? Like you give it one seemingly impossible task, which is to build an invisible tunnel through one of the most aggressive nation-state internet firewalls on the planet.
Right, it sounds like science fiction, but today we are looking at a real experiment from February 2026 where someone did exactly that.
Yeah, and spoiler alert here, the AI's first attempt was completely annihilated. I mean, it got shut down in exactly 4 hours.
It is such a phenomenal look at this, high-stakes, real-time game of cat and mouse.
Yeah.
We're basically watching a machine hit a solid concrete wall, learn from the impact, and then completely redesign its whole approach.
Exactly. So welcome to the deep dive. Our mission today is to explore a developer's post, which is simply titled, "I gave Claude Code a VPS and asked it to build my own VPN."
Which is a great title, honestly.
Right. It's a front row seat to the modern reality of internet filtering. But to understand why this developer even did this in the first place, we have to look at the motivation.
The trust deficit.
Yes, the trust deficit. If you've ever used a commercial VPN, you might have had that creeping realization that you are routing every single piece of your personal internet traffic through a company you know absolutely nothing about.
Right, you're just trusting some unknown entity not to log or snoop on or manipulate your data.
Which is a massive leap of faith when you really think about it. So the author of this post finally hit a wall with that. They decided that since they understood the basics of server management, they were just going to self-host their privacy.
So they went out and rented an Atlas Networks VPS. And for those unfamiliar, a VPS is a virtual private server. It's basically a remote computer you can rent by the month.
And this specific one was located in Los Angeles, right?
Yeah, in LA. And they specifically made sure it featured what's called 9929er routing.
Okay, what does that mean exactly?
It's a premium network route. It's known for having highly stable cross-border connectivity. And importantly, it also came with a static residential IP address.
Meaning it looks like a normal home internet connection, not like it's coming from some giant data center.
Exactly. And this is where the experiment really kicks off. Because instead of manually configuring the server themselves, the author took the SSH credentials.
Which are like the absolute top-level administrative passwords, right?
Right, the master keys.
Yeah.
They handed them directly to an AI agent called Claude Code.
They just gave the AI total control. No training wheels, no, step-by-step hand-holding.
Just a prompt and an empty server.
Yeah. But before we look at the incredibly slick, automated system the AI eventually built, we have to talk about that spectacular failure I mentioned at the start.
Yes, the 4-hour disaster.
Right, because Claude Code gets the keys, it analyzes the goal, and it immediately deploys its first choice, which was a proxy protocol called ShadowSocks.
And well, on paper, that was actually a highly logical first move for the AI. ShadowSocks is a total industry standard protocol.
Oh, absolutely.
For years, I mean, it was the absolute workhorse for bypassing firewalls globally.
Okay, let's unpack this then. If ShadowSocks is the industry standard, why was the server completely blocked? And I don't mean just throttled, but totally cut off from the internet a mere 4 hours later.
Well, because the nature of state-level firewalls, particularly the Great Firewall, or the GFW, has fundamentally changed over the last few years.
How so?
The GFW doesn't just rely on a static block list of banned websites anymore. It is a highly active, incredibly aggressive probing system.
Wait, active probing? How does that actually work? Like, if my traffic is encrypted with ShadowSocks, how does the firewall even know what I'm doing?
What's fascinating here is that the firewall does not need to break your encryption at all. It doesn't need to read the actual payload of your data to know you're running a proxy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it just looks at the shape of your traffic.
Yeah.
ShadowSocks generates what cryptographers call high entropy ciphertext.
Meaning it looks completely random.
Precisely. It looks like perfectly randomized data. But
Yeah.
to an advanced firewall, perfect randomness is actually highly suspicious.
Because normal internet traffic has a recognizable structure to it, right?
Exactly. When the firewall spots this weirdly random data, combined with a digital handshake that doesn't look like standard web traffic, it immediately gets suspicious.
So it flags the server, but you said active probing earlier. What does it actually do once it gets suspicious?
It attacks, literally.
Yeah.
The firewall actively sends malformed network packets to your server,
Just to see how it reacts.
just to see how the server reacts. And when the server reacts exactly the way a ShadowSocks proxy server is programmed to react,
The firewall has its confirmation.
yep, it drops a concrete block on that IP address.
Yeah.
The hosting provider in Los Angeles actually had to confirm to the author that active blocking was occurring.
That is wild. Using shadow socks on a crush IP today is basically like sneaking around a dark room in a glow-in-the-dark camouflage suit.
That's a great way to put it.
Like, the camo itself is what makes you incredibly obvious. Trying to look like invisible, encrypted nothingness is literally the trigger for getting banned.
Yeah, the strategy of total obfuscation is dead.
Yeah.
Which means the AI and the author had to pivot to a completely opposite strategy.
Right, because hiding in the dark got the server shot down, so the only alternative was hiding in plain sight.
Exactly. They had to look like something very specific and very large.
And this leads to a tool called Singbox, and a protocol brilliantly named VLES Reality.
Reality is an absolute masterpiece of what we call adversarial design.
Adversarial design.
Yeah. Instead of trying to hide the traffic, Reality borrows the TLS fingerprint of a massive legitimate website. The author uses Microsoft.com as the example in the post.
Let's slow down for a second. A TLS fingerprint, TLS is transport layer security, right?
Correct.
It's the standard protocol that secures basically every HTTPS website we visit.
Exactly. Every time your browser connects to a secure website, the two computers do a complex mathematical dance called a handshake to establish a secure connection.
Right.
But here's the critical detail. Every piece of server software does that dance just a little bit differently. They leave unique cryptographic fingerprints.
Oh, I see. So Reality mimics the exact cryptographic handshake of Microsoft servers.
Yes. To any outside observer or any firewall inspecting the connection, your communication with this random VPS in Los Angeles is literally indistinguishable from a standard user simply browsing a Microsoft service.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. But wait, if the firewall is so smart and it uses active probing with those malformed packets we talked about, why can't it figure out that this random IP address in Los Angeles isn't actually owned by Microsoft?
Because the system forces the firewall into an impossible economic dilemma.
An economic dilemma.
Yeah. The firewall inspects the connection. The handshake is perfect. It perfectly matches Microsoft. To block this proxy connection with any certainty, the firewall would have to blindly block all traffic that shares that Microsoft fingerprint.
Oh, wow. So to catch the proxy, they would have to block all of Microsoft.
Yes. And a nation state cannot afford the infrastructural and economic damage of blocking one of the largest tech companies on Earth.
That is genuinely brilliant.
Right. By working with the constraints of the system rather than against them, Reality forces the firewall to let the traffic through. Mm. It always chooses to let Microsoft through.
It uses the firewall's own scale against it. But Cloud Code didn't just stop there, did it?
No, it engineered an entire web of redundancies.
Yeah, it set up three fallback protocols alongside Reality just in case. It configured Hysteria 2 and TUIC v5, which rely on UDP traffic. And then as a sort of last resort, it set up vmessws, which uses WebSockets.
And those UDP fallbacks are vital.
For someone who isn't a network engineer, what makes UDP so special here?
Well, if you've ever dealt with network protocols, you know that standard traffic uses TCP, which basically requires a delivery receipt for every packet of data.
Right. It's very strict.
UDP is like sending a letter without requiring a receipt. It just fires the data off. That makes it incredibly fast, which is fantastic for bypassing throttled networks, even if it's slightly less reliable.
Makes sense. So the AI maps these four distinct protocols to four open ports on the server, and then programs the firewall to permanently slam the door shut on every other port.
Exactly, securing the perimeter.
And the client software on the author's local computer, an app called Clash Verge, is set to auto-select VLSS Reality primarily and only use those UDP or WebSocket options if things go horribly wrong.
It's a very robust architecture, but, you know, having a great disguise only works if your identification matches.
Your ID being the SSL certificate.
Right. In the server world, your ID is your SSL certificate.
Yeah.
And acquiring that certificate without blowing your cover is where the AI really had to flex its muscles.
Because this is notoriously frustrating, even for seasoned human developers, getting an SSL cert usually involves proving you own a domain name.
And to prove you own a domain name, standard practice is to open port 80 to the public internet so the certificate authority, Let's Encrypt, can verify it.
Which defeats the entire purpose of what we just talked about.
Completely.
Opening port 80 to the whole internet just to prove you own a domain is like, I don't know, leaving your front door wide open so the mailman can drop off a single package. It exposes you.
It does expose you. So Claude Code took a much more elegant approach. It used a tool called acme.esh combined with the Cloudflare DNS API for validation.
How does that bypass opening the port?
Instead of using an open port, the AI talks directly to the domain name system, or DNS. It uses the API to temporarily create a hidden text record, a TXT record in the domain settings.
Oh, I get it. So let's encrypt checks the DNS.
Sees the secret text record, verifies ownership, issues a certificate, and then the AI instantly deletes the text record.
Boom. No extra ports exposed to the wild internet. That's incredibly clean.
Very clean.
And the post mentions that while it was doing this, Claude Code was simultaneously handling BBR TCP optimization, which basically makes the network traffic flow faster, right?
Yeah, optimizing speed.
Setting up the firewall rules, ensuring everything would auto-start if the server ever rebooted. It was doing a lot.
But then, the friction of real-world deployment hit.
Ah, the dreaded let's encrypt error.
Yes. The author had previously run a popular one-click setup script for the Singbox software. It was created by a developer named Young Geck. And this script had a deeply obscure quirk.
What kind of quirk?
It had accidentally cached the server's domain name inside an email address field in the system's memory.
Oh, no. So when Claude Code tried to run its shiny new acme.esh process to get a certificate, it blindly reused that corrupted cache.
Exactly. Let's Encrypt received a request with a domain name crammed into an email field and threw back a completely ambiguous, confusing error message.
And this is where we see the AI's true capability. I mean, it didn't just fail and give up.
No, it didn't.
But it did take 3 failed attempts and almost 45 minutes of working in these like 10 to 15 minute debugging loops to figure it out. Which begs the question. We think of AI as this flawless coder that instantly knows all the documentation. So why did it take almost an hour to figure out a basic email field typo? Is it actually thinking or is it just guessing?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the true value of an AI in DevOps isn't that it writes perfect code on the first try. It is the AI's systematic methodology.
Systematic how?
When the AI hit that ambiguous error, it didn't just mash the retry button, which, let's be honest, is what most human developers would do first.
Oh, guilty as charged. Absolutely.
It actively investigated. It checked the state of the system. It realized that the script wasn't failing because of a bad command, but because it was trusting a corrupted memory bank.
Wow.
So it surgically removed the problem. It completely deleted the certificate authority cache directory, wiping the system's memory of that bad email address, and forcefully reran the command with an explicit flag to override the bad data.
That flag being the account email flag, right?
Right. It deduced the root cause entirely autonomously.
That is wild. It traced the logic of the failure, and once it cleared that hurdle and the core network was stable, the entire nature of the project shifted.
It really did.
It went from a purely technical survival challenge against a firewall to a user experience challenge.
Because standard self-hosted proxies are notoriously hostile to the end user.
They are so ugly to use. Usually you just get this massive string of garbled text called base64 gibberish or maybe a QR code.
Yeah, and you paste it into your app and that's it. You have zero visibility into what's happening under the hood.
But the author wanted to share this setup with friends. They wanted it to feel like a premium $20 a month commercial service.
They wanted a live dynamic subscription URL that served real-time traffic statistics.
So Claude Code shifts from network engineer to full-stack developer. It builds a custom Python HTTP server.
And to keep it secure, it sits that Python server behind Mengdanks.
Right. And if you aren't familiar, Mengdanks acts like a traffic cop for incoming web connections, making sure everything is routed safely over a secure TLS connection on port 443.
And the Python service the AI wrote does something highly specific. It reads a configuration YAML file to get the basic settings, but then it actually hooks into the server's core network interface.
Using a command called vinstat, right? Like
yeah.
vinstat --json.
Yes. Which pulls the real-time upload and download statistics directly from the VPS itself.
Okay, so it takes that live data and dynamically injects it into a specific HTTP response header called subscription user info.
Exactly.
So what does this all mean? It's kind of like building a high-performance engine, but realizing you forgot to install the dashboard gauges, right?
Right. Your user needs to know how much gas is in the tank.
Exactly. Injecting that live data into the header is basically like a bouncer at a club stamping your hand at the door. But the stamp updates in real time to tell you exactly how many drinks you have left on your tab before you're kicked out.
That's a fun way to picture it. Every time the client software connects, the server sends back this tiny message saying, here is your upload total, your download total, your overall limit, and your expiration date.
And the client software, Clash Verge, reads that dynamic stamp and automatically renders a beautiful visual traffic bar right in the app's interface.
So the author's friends can open their app, Use a custom URL secured by a random 16-character hex string and instantly see a live progress bar,
showing exactly how much of their 3 terabyte monthly quota they've burned through. It is so seamless.
It's a fantastic user experience.
Yeah.
But the AI did hit one final fascinating bug while building this dashboard.
Oh, right.
The Python service initially crashed every time it received a head request.
Okay, I know what a GRQ request is. That's when my browser asks a server to send a web page. What is a head request?
Exactly. A GATE request asks for the headers and the body of the page. But sometimes a client app just wants to check the metadata without wasting bandwidth downloading the whole file.
Oh, I see.
That is a head request. The ClashVerge app uses head requests purely to fetch those live traffic stats without having to re-download the entire massive proxy configuration file every single time you open the app.
Well, that makes perfect sense for saving data.
It does. But the custom Python server the AI built wasn't initially programmed to understand a head request. So when the app asked for the stats, the Python server basically threw an error and crashed.
How did the AI figure that out?
It tracked the failure through the entire software chain. It looked at the raw logs, saw the client app send the head request, saw how the Nginx traffic cop forwarded it, saw the Python service panic and reject it, and pinpointed the exact broken link in the chain.
Wow.
Yeah, it simply went into the Python code, added a do_head method to handle the request properly, and the crash was fixed.
It's like having a tireless junior developer who never gets fatigued by reading raw server logs.
Pretty much.
I mean, we just walked through an AI autonomously building a backend, navigating active firewall probing, debugging SSL caches, and coding a dynamic Python subscription service, all in a single afternoon.
It is a staggering display of automated problem solving. But the source material notes that this experiment ultimately revealed a very hard boundary.
Yes, it showed us exactly where the AI's capabilities end and where the human absolutely has to step in. Because there was one thing Claude Code simply could not figure out.
The undocumented edge case.
Right. The ClashVerge software running on the author's local computer had this bizarre quirk. If you manually dragged a configuration file into its folder, it worked fine. But the moment you restarted the app, ClashVerge would just arbitrarily delete the file.
It only permanently saved configuration that were imported via that dynamic subscription URL the AI built.
And because this behavior was happening entirely on the user's local physical desktop machine, the AI, sitting on a remote server in Los Angeles, had absolutely no way to observe it.
Right.
So the AI is basically brilliant, but completely trapped in its own remote box. It's totally blind to anything happening on the user's actual device.
And this raises an important question about the future of technical work. What this developer's post is telling us is that we are moving rapidly into an era of highly efficient management.
Meaning you no longer need to be a DevOps wizard who memorizes every Linux command or understands the intricacies of a TLS handshake protocol.
You just need to be a good manager.
Yeah.
The author notes a clear division of labor here. If a task has clear success criteria, like make this web address return a formatted YAML file, the AI can debug that to completion entirely on its own. It has the logs, the environment, and the control.
But anything involving an undocumented client-side behavior requires a human.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The human has to actually watch the screen, observe the localized failure, and reason about it. You act as the eyes and ears for the AI's blind spots.
You bridge the gap between the isolated server environment and the messy reality of the user's laptop.
It is a partnership. The AI handles the execution and the deep technical logic, while the human handles context and observation.
So just to recap this wild journey for you, we started with a standard ShadowSox deployment that got nuked by active firewall probing in 4 hours. And from the ashes of that failure, an AI autonomously designed an invisible VLE SSO reality proxy mimicking Microsoft. It backed it up with 3 alternate UDP and WebSocket protocols, navigated a messy SSL certificate caching bug without exposing vulnerable server ports, and built a custom Python backend to serve live traffic stats to a polished UI.
It's incredible.
All in one afternoon, all for the cost of a basic VPS.
It completely redefined what a single individual can build in a few hours.
It really does. But before we wrap up, I want to leave you with a thought, something that wasn't explicitly in the developer's original post, but that this whole experiment heavily implies.
I'm listening.
We just saw a consumer-level AI autonomously design, deploy, and debug a complex system specifically built to bypass a national-level firewall in a matter of hours. It learned the firewall's rules and it adapted.
Right.
So how long until those massive national firewalls are fully operated by counter AIs? Are we quietly entering an era where human censorship and human evasion are both completely replaced?
Like an invisible real-time AI versus AI arms race.
Exactly. Happening in the network packets beneath our feet, moving faster than any human could ever monitor.
The machine that builds the wall, endlessly adapting against the machine that finds the cracks.
It makes you wonder what privacy will even look like when the speed of the game exceeds human perception. The tools we use to protect ourselves are getting smarter, but so are the systems trying to watch us.
Definitely something to think about.
Well, thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the tech you rely on every day, and we'll see you next time.